Translation by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. O Lord, You are the cause of bondage and liberation of the entire universe, because You are its ruler. Those who are advanced in spiritual consciousness surrender unto You, and therefore You are the cause of mitigating their distresses, and You are also the cause of their liberation. We therefore worship Your Lordship. Purport by His Divine Grace. Actually, Lord Vishnu maintains and accomplishes all good fortune. If one has to take shelter of Lord Vishnu, why should the demigods take shelter of Lord Shiva? They did so because Lord Vishnu acts through Lord Shiva in the creation of the material world. Lord Shiva acts on behalf of Lord Vishnu. When the Lord says in the Bhagavad Gita 14.4 that He is the father of all living entities, Aham Bija Pradapita, this refers to actions performed by Lord Vishnu through Lord Shiva. Lord Vishnu is always unattached to material activities, and when material activities are to be performed, Lord Vishnu performs them through Lord Shiva. Lord Shiva is therefore worshipped on the level of Lord Vishnu. When Lord Vishnu is untouched by the external energy, He is Lord Vishnu. But when He is in touch with the external energy, He appears in His feature as Lord Shiva. So just this last sentence again. When Lord Vishnu is untouched by the external energy, He is Lord Vishnu. But when He is in touch with the external energy, He appears in His feature as Lord Shiva. Om Gyanati Mirana Sanyana Jana Chalak Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So this is an interesting verse. These next two or three verses are in a similar mood, where a great deal of respect is offered to Lord Shiva by the demigods, almost as if they were offering those respects to Lord Vishnu. And Srila Prabhupada gives an interesting analysis here as to why that is. Of course, such words of praise, You are the cause of bondage and liberation of the entire universe because You are the ruler. You are the cause of mitigating people's distresses, and You are the cause of liberation. Such terms are actually rightfully applied to Lord Vishnu. But Lord Shiva, being a very special personality, also deserves some of those accolades. As devotees, we often make... We're often very keen to make a very direct distinction between Lord Shiva and Lord Vishnu. And many times in Prabhupada's books we hear of Lord Shiva described as a demigod, as if he's in some way inferior. But it might be useful to understand in which sense Lord Shiva is referred to as a demigod. What is the main characteristic or traits of demigods? Yes, they are temporary, and people worship them to obtain fruits which in themselves are temporary. This is a verse from the Gita. So that is generally the mood in which one approaches a demigod, to obtain some fruitive result, generally. Of course, occasionally someone may approach a demigod for the purpose of receiving their sanction or blessing in order to serve Lord Vishnu better. That can sometimes happen. But generally, most people who worship the demigods do so for some immediate material benediction. And Lord Shiva also sometimes acts in that capacity, in that he will happily receive the prayers of unlimited entities within this world. In one sense, he is perhaps one of the most merciful persons in this world. In order to obtain a benediction from a demigod, one needs to undergo a process which is largely situated in the mode of goodness. And of course, that then rules out a large number of people who cannot follow that. The demoniac species, etc. Unless they themselves obtain a very highly qualified guru like Shukracharya, who can then perform that appeal on their behalf. However, Lord Shiva, he is someone who is so special because he takes on the task of delivering the most unqualified persons. The bhutas, pretas, pisachas, those living entities who would never normally get a chance to leave this world. His external feature is sometimes very ghastly, very unclean. He hangs around in the crematoriums, wears a garland of skulls. He's surrounded by these lower beings who are definitely not auspicious in their behavior or characteristics. Yet somehow or other, because of his very merciful nature, he somehow attracts them to follow him. And this is a very important point. They themselves are not qualified to follow Lord Vishnu or anyone else who can lift them, uplift them. Lord Shiva is very merciful with his benedictions. So this is an attractive feature for them. In the Shastras, there are a number of occasions when Lord Shiva grants benedictions to persons who then completely misuse them. He's known as Ashutosh, very, very merciful and very easily pleased. And so whoever it is, if they manage to sufficiently please Lord Shiva, he may offer them the benediction they desire. One example is Vrikasur, who wanted the benediction from Lord Shiva that whoever's head he touched would immediately explode, become detached from his body. So after pleasing Lord Shiva, he received that benediction. But being somewhat of a rascal, he thought, let me try out this benediction. And he ran after Lord Shiva and tried to touch his head. Lord Shiva at that point realized that perhaps this wasn't the right person to give the benediction to. But still, he couldn't do anything about it. His own benedictions are exceptionally powerful. So he went and took shelter of Lord Vishnu. So Lord Shiva has a little license in this, in that he can give benedictions to unqualified persons. He gave benedictions to Ravana. A lot of Ravana's strength came from Lord Shiva. He gives benedictions to unqualified persons, knowing full well that Lord Vishnu is there to fix things when things ultimately go wrong. Lord Vishnu is very careful who he gives benedictions to and what type of benediction. But others like Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma sometimes aren't so careful. But in a higher sense, we can see that whenever they have given those types of benedictions, some great leela or pastime has taken place. Narad Muni is also an interesting character who pops up in the same way as Lord Shiva sometimes appears in our histories, in that he appears to direct the course of events in order to achieve something else. He advised Ravana, he advised Kamsa, that, the eighth child will appear to kill you. But actually, it could be any of them. How can you be sure it's only the eighth child who will be the cause of your destruction? So now, externally, that can seem to be not very good advice, because he knew the consequence of that demon's behavior. That demon would then go on to kill all eight children. But Narad Muni has another plan in mind. He has a plan that the Lord's advent should take place as quickly as possible, and that these persons who would be removed, they are not ordinary persons either, and that their passing is also something very special. Devotees don't lament the passing away of someone if it is for a higher purpose. We have different examples of this. Ganga Devi drowned the first seven sons that she had. Now, of course, they were Vasus, who were not meant to spend much time here on this material world. Only the eighth one, Bhishma Dev, was destined to spend a long time here because he had received the most serious of the curses of the others. So when we see externally very exalted persons doing very strange things, there is a system behind it. It is not that anyone and everyone can perform a very strange activity like this and get away with it. But still, when a very exalted person does it, it's up to us to think that there is something else going on here that I may not be aware of. This external body and its manifestation is really a subservient principle to the principle of pleasing the Lord. So through some of these examples, we can see that great saintly persons, Lord Shiva, Ganga Devi, Narad Muni, they act to bring about a rapid arrival of the Lord and a rapid engagement in his pastimes. And the demons are, of course, very much necessary in those pastimes. They actually add the spice that makes those pastimes fun. In this particular situation, As Maharaj explained yesterday or the day before, he explained it's not the case that the demons and the demigods were going on a pleasure boat trip across the sea, on a pleasant sea journey. That wasn't really the case. somehow they had been convinced to cooperate in order to produce nectar, which is also quite an unusual event, that the demigods and demons cooperate in some tremendous project. But it shows us that when the goals are high enough, then anyone will cooperate with anyone. There's a saying that my enemy's enemy is my best friend. So if someone really holds a great deal of enmity towards someone, they may create all kinds of friendships with a whole range of other people who may previously have been their own enemies. So it really depends on one's determination and one's goal. These friends, enemies, they can change at a moment's notice. Someone who can be very friendly can instantly turn out to be an enemy. A good example of this is Kamsa. He was personally driving his sister, who had just got married, back to her new home. And as soon as the Akashvani, as soon as the sound came from the sky, "You Kamsa, you fool, this eighth child will kill you," immediately he exhibited a completely different feature. So there is nothing too impressive to be gained from this duality of friend and enemy. This is why it is always explained in the Shastras that one who advances in spiritual life, they move into a situation where friends and enemies become inconsequential terms. One starts to see everyone on a pure spiritual platform. So, in this situation, the friends and the enemies, the demigods and the demons, they are somehow cooperating. And this tremendous poison has come out. This hala-hala poison is described in text 20. Text 19. And all of these persons, when they saw that this uncontrollable poison was forcefully spreading, they approached Lord Shiva, Sadashiva, and they took shelter of him. Now Prabhupada touches on this as to what is the need for them to approach Lord Shiva when Lord Vishnu is there himself. In his form as Ajita, he has also helped the demigods when they were unable to churn the ocean. He personally started churning when he saw that the demigods and the demons started to become tired. So one very important point here is that the Lord likes to glorify his devotees. And he wanted all credit to be offered to Lord Shiva. Indeed, this whole pastime is taking place so that the people in general can understand Lord Mahadev's glories, in that he voluntarily agrees to take on board a heavy dose of poison, which will definitely have some effect on him. It is not that he will be unscathed by that. He agrees to take this on as a service for the ultimate benefit. Often we think that if someone does something extraordinary or extremely self-deprecating in some way, or something that causes one great harm in the service of another, oh, he can do that because he's a great person. He's a very powerful person. For me, I'm not in that league, so I shouldn't do the same. But actually, the point that is made in these purports is that Lord Shiva also took on some pain, and his throat became blue when he drank that poison. And others also, like Haridas Thakur, when they act as examples of great humility, they also endure great suffering. They don't think that I'm a great person and I can do this. They think actually that, why should I not suffer? This is definitely the mood of Lord Jesus Christ also. Why should I not suffer for others? Now the Lord himself, there's always a great interplay between the Lord and his devotees. So whenever the Lord sees a devotee genuinely thinking like this, really genuinely, then he also acts in some interesting way. So he acted in the case of Haridas Thakur. Lord Chaitanya said, "I personally came and covered your body with mine. So just look at the scars on my body." So that's Lord Chaitanya's mercy when he sees his devotee doing something exceptional. So the devotee always thinks that it is up to me to resolve the issue. A devotee always acts as if the situation entirely depends upon him. But he knows that the results are ultimately up to Krishna. So this gives the devotee a great sense of responsibility, because it avoids the blame culture. That, okay, if something didn't happen, it was because the Lord wanted it, or it's because others failed somehow in their service, or it's because, oh, I simply wasn't strong enough, and that again is the Lord's fault, because after all, He is the ability in man, and in this particular example, He didn't provide that ability. So somehow, the general tendency of most people is to try to direct their own shortcomings back to the Lord. But a devotee very much accepts his shortcomings and very much neglects them also. Sometimes neglects them to his own detriment. But the Lord is pleased by that effort. And He will often send other devotees who will then encourage that particular devotee and allow him to not suffer too much from that situation. We have the example of Hanuman when, after his tail was set on fire, he decided to do something with that terrible situation. Normally if you're on fire, you try and roll on the ground or jump in a lake or something to put it out. So Hanuman knew very well that he would suffer. But still, he ran across the whole of Lanka and set fire to the whole thing. Now Sita Devi saw this, and she was praying. She was praying that please let Hanuman be saved from Agni. She prayed to him because she had some benediction. So the Lord arranged for her to add some protection to Hanuman's plight. Hanuman wasn't in the least bit bothered. He carried out his service, total disregard for his health. We hear the standard system, health, sadhana, service. Well, sometimes in the case of Hanuman, we see he often disregards that. He'll go straight and do whatever's necessary. He'll jump straight to the service. It's not to say that this formula is wrong. It is a formula which Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj and the Acharyas have strongly encouraged. It's a very essential formula for sadhakas. But still, the overriding principle of serving the Lord and pleasing Him is the one that's glorified through these examples of Hanuman, Haridas Thakur and others. They disregard their health and their own suffering condition in order to please the Lord. So, So Lord Shiva is glorified here because he takes on this onerous and very thankless task of drinking this entire ocean of poison. The next few verses, they actually go on to glorify him in even more interesting ways. They practically describe him as the supreme, and they say that Lord Brahma, Lord Vishnu are even subordinate to him. Now this we can understand as not so much of a philosophical fact or a tattva principle. It's more a case of spontaneous expression out of desperation. When Hiranyakashipu was praying to Lord Brahma for his tremendous benedictions, he actually addressed Lord Brahma in exactly the terms that one would address Lord Vishnu. Similar to this. He said, "You are the Supreme Lord, the Supreme Creator, the Supreme Destroyer. It is only from You that everything comes, all abilities come from You." So the mentality of the demons is that generally they will mistake the demigods, especially exalted personalities like Lord Brahma and perhaps Lord Shiva, as being the ultimate truth. Because they know that Vishnu is something else. He's beyond them. But still, out of their foolishness, they think that they can kill Vishnu. This was definitely the fault of Hiranyakashipu. He thought that by these benedictions of Lord Brahma, that I could not be killed during the day, during the night, inside, outside, by any weapon, by any animal. He thought that by these benedictions, he could actually avoid being killed by Lord Vishnu, who was his sworn enemy, because he had killed his brother Hiranyaksha. So the demons, because of their foolishness, often think in this way. And it doesn't ultimately do them any good, because sooner or later they actually discover who is really in charge. Now this principle of the Lord glorifying His devotees also comes out in a few other examples. In this case, He glorifies Lord Shiva because He wants him to perform a particular service. The Lord has already performed so many services in this whole Leela. When the Mandara mountain sank, He personally lifted it because it was unsupported. When the demigods and demons were trying to churn this mountain using Vasuki, they couldn't do it. They gave up after a time, so Lord Vishnu stepped in to help. He helps in numerous cases here. The demigods wanted to be at the front of the snake, the head of the snake. The demons wanted to be at the head of the snake because they thought that's a better place to be in their own activities. And the demons and the demigods also were at the front. Lord Vishnu stepped in and said, actually, you go. We'll all go to the back. So as soon as Lord Vishnu grabbed the tail of the snake, all the demigods followed him. So this entire thing is happening because of Lord Vishnu's potency. So here it is very clear that Lord Shiva is being approached for a specific purpose of glorification. Now we also see, and this also confuses many people, that Lord Ramachandra worshipped Lord Shiva. And for those who have their specific philosophy to propound, the conclusion they draw is, ah, just see, Lord Shiva is superior to Lord Ramachandra. So that again is an interesting consequence. For us, actually, the two things are not such a major contradiction. Lord Shiva and Lord Vishnu are practically the same person. In the Brahma Samhita, you hear of the description of the difference. Kshiram yatha didivikara vishesha yogat sangat sanjayate nahitata pritagasti hetu yashambutam apitata samupaitikariyat govindam adipurusham tamaham bhajami kshiram yatha didivikara vishesha yogat. Just as milk is converted into yogurt by the action of acids, so similarly this principle of Shambhu appears as a transformation of that principle Lord Vishnu, simply for the sake of carrying out activities in this material world. So Lord Shiva is actually in one sense his own tattva. He is practically Lord Vishnu himself. It is described the original Sadashiva is actually an expansion of Vishnu in the Vaikuntha planets. He resides there. And his consort is also an expansion of Ramadevi, an expansion of Radharani ultimately. Now here in this material world, we have a very interesting combination. Shri Radha Gokulananda Ki. So here in this material world, Lord Shiva appears, and Lord Shiva in his initial manifestation as Sadashiva is the topmost principle. Then there are numerous Rudra expansions which come from him. And he also manifests in all the different universes. When the Lord creates the universe in his form as Karuna Dakshaya Vishnu, the innumerable universes, they emanate from his pores. And the total Mahat Tattva is created by him at that point, which is the total sum of all the material ingredients. Then Mahavishnu casts his glance, and that glance is understood to be represented by Lord Shiva. And that glance then acts to agitate that material energy, which up until then has lain dormant. So that is Lord Shiva's very special position. Durga Devi, she's the superintendent of this particular universe, in charge of the material elements and everything, and the whole material situation. In the Brahma Samhita, there's a description of her also given, perhaps in a very elaborate way. Srishti stiti pralaya sadhana shaktireka chayeva yasya bhuvanani bibharti durga ichchanurupam api yasya chacheshtate sa govindam adipurusham tamaham bhajami. She's described as Chaya. That personality who is worshipped by all persons in the material world as Durga, she is actually a manifestation of the original Ramadevi, of the original Radharani. But she appears to take a Chaya form, a shadow form. So in a sense, Lord Shiva's form is also like that. It is a glance. It is not the real substance of Lord Vishnu. It is the potencies of Lord Vishnu in a specific method which directly contacts material energy. That contact, as Prabhupada explains here, when Lord says in Bhagavad Gita that he is the father of all living entities, aham bija prada pita, this refers to actions performed by Lord Vishnu through Lord Shiva. So through that glance which manifests as Lord Shiva, the injection of the living entities into the material energy takes place. That is that particular mechanism. So he's the seed-giving father. But directly he doesn't need to do those activities. He leaves those to Lord Shiva. And then the actual nurturing of that, of those living entities, that takes place in a higher sense through Mother Durga here in this world. The topmost two personalities, Krishna and Radharani, they don't really need to get involved with this. They leave that to their expansions. Lord Vishnu could just as easily have drunk that entire poison. He could have nullified it so quickly. But he specifically wanted to glorify Lord Shiva and to make him an example for all living entities from that point onwards. That here is a great person and you should understand his tremendous position. Now we have the striking example of one individual who didn't understand that position of Lord Shiva. Who's that? Daksha. Exactly. Daksha, he simply took Lord Shiva to be his external form. He couldn't comprehend Lord Shiva's internal qualities. He couldn't understand that Shiva actually means auspicious. And he actually says that your name means auspicious, but actually you are most inauspicious. Because you hang around with all these low life forms, like the ghosts and the demons and the hobgoblins. You put garlands of skulls around your neck, and you do all abominable things. You are like a monkey, he said. He dared to call Lord Shiva a monkey. That's really not a good strategy. An exalted person who's practically on the level of Lord Vishnu and who acts on his behalf, to call them a monkey or degrade them in such a way is not good. But Lord Shiva actually displayed another one of his qualities, complete indifference to what fools speak. This is a good demonstration of that. Completely indifferent, completely tolerant. When Lord Shiva was blaspheming him in this way, when Daksha was blaspheming him in this way, it sparked a whole series of cursing and counter-cursing between Daksha's followers and the followers of Bhrigu, who was leading the demigods. And this cursing and counter-cursing went on for some time, and a whole list of curses were given to each one of those. The demigods were cursed to become poor, and the demons were cursed to live in ghastly places, and all sorts of things came. Lord Shiva just got up from that assembly and just went home. Lord Shiva only took action later when his wife, Sati, was actually blasphemed by Daksha through complete neglect. And at that point, he then created a tremendous demon, pulled out one of his hairs, and this huge demon manifested. And he went and finished off that entire sacrifice. Daksha lost his head. His principal followers lost many of their features. I particularly remember Pusha, who had shown his teeth during the cursing, lost his beautiful teeth. Anyway, it wasn't a nice scene. A lot of problems happened. And only eventually, when they realized that something serious had gone wrong, Lord Brahma advised Daksha to approach Lord Shiva and beg his forgiveness. And for which, of course, Lord Shiva did. He didn't hold a grudge. He accepted that this fool has now been reformed, and out of his mercy he gave him the head of a goat. So not quite restored back to full health, but given enough that he could carry on in some method or other. Now Daksha is actually a very exalted person. Daksha is probably more competent and more qualified than practically any religious person today in this world, in terms of his exalted understanding, in terms of his practice of religious principles. He's one of the Prajapatis. And it is actually these Prajapatis, in the previous verse it says, the Prajapatis said, best of all demigods. It is the Prajapatis who are praying to Lord Shiva here. So this also highlights another point, the danger that can happen when one becomes very much puffed up by their own particular format of devotional service. Daksha's own particular form of devotional service in his particular role was as a progenitor, and he would perform sacrifices, and he would, in many ways, he was a guru to his own followers also. None of the demigods in that assembly dared to say anything while Daksha was speaking, even though what he was speaking was highly intolerable, because he was a senior person for them. But Daksha's specific mode involved mode of goodness activities, mode of goodness sacrifice, and he simply could not comprehend how a person like Lord Shiva could be understood to be on a platform of pure devotion, on a platform that was actually much more exalted than his own, simply because of identifying with his external activities. So this is always a danger in devotional life. Devotional life is for everyone. The modes are actually inconsequential. in terms of one's actual ultimate engagement in devotional life. We were just reading in Dwarka, going through the Bhagavatam, Dwarka pastimes, where it's described that every single living entity in Dwarka city is actually a pure devotee of the Lord, even the prostitutes. So this was an interesting point. How is it that there are prostitutes in Dwarka city? And how can a prostitute, by the very nature of that profession, be a great exalted devotee of the Lord? Well, how they are there, we don't know. But the fact is, they are tremendous devotees of the Lord. They, whatever activity they've adopted, which is an activity of the lower modes, it is just out of consequence. Yet their consciousness is somewhere totally different. Now for a practitioner of Krishna consciousness shouldn't be happy with remaining in the lower modes. It's not really meant to happen like that. We're not meant to stay there. But it doesn't exclude the fact that there are others who may externally display a feature of acting in the lower modes, exactly like Lord Shiva. Lord Shiva is a guna avatar. Right? The Lord has different categories of avatars. And Lord Shiva accepts this quality of ignorance, which doesn't mean that he himself is ignorant. He's actually very, very competent. He accepts the external feature of ignorance with its external display in order to attract those who are similarly in that, who really are in ignorance. So it just highlights for us that externals are not the way to judge. And these examples display that if someone considers their service to be very refined, very pakka, very pure, very unquestionable, they may be doing the highest form of service, it may be most pleasing to Lord Krishna. There will always be some way one can find within the Gita, one who preaches my message is most perfect. Srila Prabhupada may say, one who distributes my books is the most pleasing to me. We will find whichever sentence assists us to become happy with our particular contribution. That is always dangerous. So we should understand that the Lord has innumerable servants, and he accepts the service of the most insignificant and the most exalted equally. There are many, many examples of this. But for a devotee who is practicing, it should be their goal that they actually try to progress through the modes. If as a service we are placed in charge or expected to act in one of the modes, as Lord Shiva is, then that's a different thing. But by nature, our consciousness should not be of the lower modes. So therefore you have a whole sequence where it starts with Shraddha, Sadhu Sangha, a little faith initially, then it goes through Sadhu Sangha, then little bhajan develops, Nishtha, and we carry on through the chain all the way to Prema Bhakti ultimately. In the Bhagavatam it is explained that after having ourselves purified, Nashta Prayeshu Abhadreshu, eventually we come to Tadara Jastamo Bhava, Kama Lobhada Yashchaye, Cheta Etera Navidam Stitam Sattve Prasiddhati. When one is sufficiently purified through this process, the lower modes of ignorance and passion, they disappear. One becomes situated in goodness, titam sattve prasiddhati, and he becomes completely happy. When one is completely happy with the whole realm of devotional service, that is a very good platform to execute that devotional service. And then ultimately, through that practice, one has to transcend even that mode of goodness. So, Lord Shiva is a very interesting person. His tattva is not so clear also from the Bhagavatam and other scriptures, because he is very mysterious. He performs numerous functions for the pleasure of the Lord. And he's an exalted person to whom we should offer our respectful obeisances and be very careful not to commit any offenses, even accidentally, in our pursuit of glorifying Lord Vishnu. So I'll stop there. Maybe if there are any questions, comments.